Yes.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The Grant and Danny Show is brought to you exclusively by the law firm Condori and Murad. They'll guide you and your family in the right direction by helping you to draft a will, set up a trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you so that you can get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. In 1/2 hour, we will get into the Noahs, Igbinoghene and Brown, and their growing roles this weekend. Who might be able to help the Commanders get off the schneid against the Giants in week 2. But right now on the BetQL guest hotline, we find our pal Will Brinson of CBS Sports to go around the NFL. Will, how was your week 1?
It was good, guys. It was good. Feel a rejuvenated sense of excitement for football this year. Feels like it's going to be a really, really good season. Very quickly, 2 things. One to plug and 1 thing to get off my chest. If you like to win money, check out the Early Edge pregame show leading up to all primetime games on our Sportsline YouTube channel. I'm hosting that every Monday, Thursday, and Sunday. And then 2, I'm matched up against my godson, Teddy Honeycutt, who's in the listening area for you guys in fantasy football this week. And I just want to let Teddy know publicly that he's going down.
Yep.
And I'm going to destroy him, and I'm going to break him and send him to 0-2 in the basement. See you, Teddy.
Teddy, it's curtains.
So I thought the shout out was gonna be for your buddy Zeke. So I'll do that for number 3. Shout out to your friend Zeke. There you go.
It's Zeke's son. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, Zeke's son, Teddy. Teddy's gonna get worked this weekend.
Teddy's gonna get put in a body bag, Wolfpack, NWO Wolfpack style.
He's gonna get these hands. All right, couple of things you've been tweeting about that I am curious about. Starting with, I saw you had tweeted a little bit about the usage for the Falcons for Kirk Cousins. I just saw a video of Kirk, who was here in D.C. for many years, like dropping back.
It doesn't look good
under center, and you just can't convince me he's okay. I mean, he does not. He said today, like, the Achilles is fine, and we know this health versus actually healthy thing. Like, yes, he's not injured anymore, but he also isn't moving like he used to. What's your take after they had him in the pistol and the gun the entire game, which is obviously not his forte? He's a drop back, you know, play action assassin. They didn't do that 1 time.
I think it's a major, major concern for this offense. And you look at, I mean, just the whole game plan. I think he was under center 1 time. So they're running out of pistol. You don't get the usage and the throws and the targets that you want for Kyle Pitts. He scored a touchdown, but, you know, sort of a busted coverage. You don't get much Drake London. It's all Ray McCloud and Cousins operating in the pistol, which is just, it's not going to fly for this offense. Ironically, of course, it came against Arthur Smith, the old OC who was so bad there in Atlanta for a few years, or the old head coach there. I think it's pretty obvious too. If you go back and watch the Falcons and the Steelers game, Kirk is throwing with his arm, and you can get away with that a little bit if you're Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. You know, but if you can't plant on your back leg because you're worried about your Achilles that you're coming back from as an elder quarterback, and you can't, you know, you're worried about dropping back from under center and running those play actions, it severely limits your playbook. It severely limits your offense. And it does beg the question, if you want to put a tinfoil hat on, you know, is this why the Falcons didn't play Michael Penix in their final preseason game? Because if Cousins isn't healthy and you paid him all that money, I realize that he's the starter and he's the incumbent. But if your offense is potentially better with Michael Penix, you should absolutely roll Penix out there and let Kirk Cousins get healthy. I know the dynamics don't work like that in the NFL, but you're right. I mean, like, they're out here force feeding us videos of Cousins doing dropbacks, and it doesn't look natural. The whole thing is very concerning if you're a Falcons fan or have the Falcons over win total this year.
both the Colts and the Packers lost in week one, but different things are going on there, obviously, right? Green Bay, maybe without Jordan Love, though there's this weird gamesmanship that maybe he plays, maybe he doesn't, I don't know. The Colts, I thought, were fairly impressive going wire, you know, toe-to-toe with Houston. Give me your thoughts on that matchup and where each team goes from here.
Yeah, very quick. What sports book are we sponsoring here? Are we working with here? I don't want to.
FanDuel guy.
Okay, FanDuel. FanDuel doesn't have this odds up yet. I like FanDuel as well, but they don't have the odds up for Malik Willis passing yards yet. I've seen it in some other places.
Under's the answer. Is it a whole number? Is it an integer?
It's 178.5. I got a 177.5, and I got that in, and the juice moved from 120 to 135 while I was betting it. So those are going to come crashing down. I don't think there's any chance Jordan Love plays this week. That would be irresponsible by the Packers, and you know, for the long term, they just paid this guy. So Malik Willis is out there. I think it's a little crazy to suggest sprained MCL. He's going to come back in 1 or 2 weeks, but I think that timeline will be adjusted based on the outcome against the Colts. They're 3-point dogs at home. They have, you know, you have Matt LaFleur, who's a really good coach, and I think there's a chance he can, you know, work some stuff up where they're you know, running the clock down to absolute zero every time. You feed Josh Jacobs. You do a lot of Jaden Reed out of the backfield stuff, and you just minimize the number of times that the Colts are on the field. The Colts like to play fast, by the way. And then, you know, also minimize the number of times Malik Willis throws to hope your defense steals one for you. So I think that's probably the timeline there. For the Colts, it'll be interesting to see the evolution of Anthony Richardson. You know, Gus Bradley said they sold out to stop the pass. And so Joe Mixon just obliterated them in the run game. And Anthony Richardson was like the number two fantasy quarterback, but completed 9 passes. One of them, one of the best throws you'll ever see in your entire life, down 60 yards on a rope, falling backwards to Alec Pierce. I think you just, his evolution as a passer is what intrigues me about them. I think they can win without that. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this game probably determines how quickly Jordan Love comes back.
Will Brinson on Grant and Danny. I'm going to start this question with the craziest status I've seen so far this season from NFL on CBS that you retweeted. Aaron Rodgers has not thrown for 300 pass yards in a game since week 14, 2021. To put in that into context, Andy Dalton has done it 3 times since with 3 different teams. He's done it with the Bears, Saints, and Panthers.
Weird.
Since Rodgers last did it. What did you make of the Jets? It's really early. It was one game. They're playing against a potential Super Bowl team. So I'm sure too much is being made out of them struggling, but I don't even mean to lead you in that way as much as, like, what were some of your takeaways from our first look at Rodgers and Hackett and Wilson together in New York?
No, I think on Rodgers specifically, there was that one drive where he was, the camera caught him, like, turning and smirking. He was like, yeah, when he, like, ripped one into to Garrett Wilson. Breece Hall's usage is through the roof. He looks like he's going to have a monster season as long as he stays healthy. I think he'll catch a ton of passes from Rodgers this year and run the ball well. They should beat up on bad teams. My biggest concern, and like with Rodgers, you know, I think if you take the Cousins thing and sort of extrapolate it by a couple of, because it was, I think it was like 8 weeks or something like that between their Achilles tears. You know, Rodgers looks like he's about 8 weeks, you know, further along than Kirk Cousins, or at least had, you know, more time to regroup and to get healthy. You can sort of tell that. I think the bigger concern sneakily is that defense for the Jets. They, you know, Hassan Reddick's not in there. You know, they lose Bryce off. You don't have as good a pass rush as you did. They got gashed by Jordan Mason, who's, I think, is a really good player. But, you know, if you know Christian McCaffrey, you feel like you're going to stop the run. I think a lot of teams can really just eat with their running backs against, and that's why I think Tennessee could win this week too, because they don't, you know, they have Hopkins and Ridley, but you can just like let these running backs and let these tight ends operate over the middle of the field, pound the football, and I'm just not sure the Jets are going to slow people down the way that they want unless you can force people into a situation where you're throwing at those corners. So Rodgers, probably a work in progress. Jets defense, a bit of a red flag to me.
Everybody, Will Brinson with us here on G&D. So we always offer all the caveats, right, Will? It's week one, fluky stuff happens. You know, this isn't a gavel slam just because of how the preseason has gone over the last few years, etc. Blah, blah, blah. Usual caveats apply. That said, is there any team that you've changed your opinion on after their week one showing? Because I got one in mind.
I mean, the Falcons kind of come to mind. Who are you?
Cleveland is mine.
Who do you have in mind?
I thought Cleveland would be frisky and competitive and tough, and they were none of those things.
No, I was down on Cleveland. Actually, Pittsburgh might be the team I changed my mind on. I was down on them. I think that, you know, they're just going to be Mike Tomlin-esque and like find a way to 9 wins once again. Cleveland, I was down on. I didn't believe in Watson and thought, you know, if you look at Jim Schwartz's defenses, for whatever reason, and I like Jim Schwartz a lot, but if you look at his defenses, typically speaking, he was just like first year spike where they play really well, and then the second year they can kind of fall off a little bit. They're also not very good on the road and great at home. They had a good score or a good record in one score games, point differential, screen, fall back to earth. You make the playoffs and win 11 games with 5 different quarterbacks starting. I mean, there's just a lot of luck involved there. And I think this Watson thing off field and on the field is casting a shadow over that whole organization. I mean, it's like you make the Baker Mayfield's lighting up the Commanders down in Tampa. Sorry guys. But you know, and then like Watson, you just have all this guaranteed money and you can't get out from under it unless you get some sort of, deus ex machina flying down from Roger Goodell that nullifies his contract, right? I mean, it just feels like just bad vibes around that entire organization.
All right, so rapid fire here. These are the toughest games for me to pick. I just want to get your thoughts on just straight up, right? Not worried about the spread necessarily this week. I have a sneaky feeling the Dolphins beat the Bills at home tonight. What do you think of that?
I like the Bills. I like the over better. I think it'll be a really, really fun game tonight.
All right, how about this one? Again, I think this is really hard to pick. We were just talking about the Browns. Cleveland at Jacksonville.
Jacksonville is just a better team right now, I think. And like Watson's good against the Jaguars, but I'm not buying it. His shoulder's toast, man.
Is there any chance New England at home can get to 2-0 and just shove it on Seattle defensively?
Yes. Good article in the Boston Herald today about how the Patriots have incorporated Mike McDonald-style stuff into their defense, sort of a thing that Bill Belichick wouldn't do. I think that defense is going to be a problem. Seattle's offensive line, a big problem.
All right, so you kind of like that upset a little bit. And then the last one would be, you were just talking about the Steelers. In Pittsburgh, I would take them to beat the Broncos going away. But Steelers, Broncos, in Denver, running with Fields again, so there's not going to be a whole lot in the passing game there. Bo Nix is at home, not on the road. I kind of think Denver gets to 1-1, maybe. What do you think there?
Yeah, I got Denver. Sean Payton's not losing to a team with Russell Wilson on the roster. And Russ might put on shoulder pads and like an extra pair of shoulder pads and a helmet and do wind sprints the entire time warming up for the game. I think you see a much better version of Bo Nix. They'll move him around a bunch. And Denver gets a close one. In that one particularly, if you're getting 3 points of Denver, I think you have to go with it. The total's like 36.5.
Bit on the spot here, Will, but is there an 0-1 team where you kind of have circled where you're going, man, they are under a lot of pressure this week. Otherwise, .. Take it wherever you want.
I mean, I think it's – I mean, maybe a little more micro into the roster of it, but I think you could say the New York Giants. You know, this is a team – Malik Nabers popped up in the injury report today. They looked just abysmal against Sam Darnold and the Vikings. So Darnold was great, don't get me wrong. But, you know, Saquon Barkley is incredible. The Eagles, Danny Dimes stinks. You know, it's probably all ownership's fault for ordering them to go in a certain direction. But now, I believe it's that. It's the game's in New York, right? It's not in Washington, right?
No, it's
in
D.C.
It's here. Oh, it's in D.C. Okay. So you're not going to get the booze if it's that. Sorry, I'm kind of confused on that one. But yeah, Washington's defense doesn't look good. I think we agree with that. The offensive line's a problem. Jane Daniels is going to be fun as hell and probably run all over the place. But if you're New York, I mean, you go to 0-2, and the Cowboys look good another week. The Eagles look good another week. And, you know, you lose with Commanders, I think the pressure gets real turned up on Daniel Jones. I mean, this might be a save-your-job game, and real, real turned up on Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, too.
Yeah, for sure. What do we know about T. Higgins' status for week two? Not a great start to him trying to get a contract.
Okay, so I'm not – I don't want to, like – I'm not saying this isn't, like, live. I don't want to be, like, conspiratorial here and, like, say something I shouldn't, but I honestly don't recall the exact moment when he got hurt in practice. It was just, like, all of a sudden he had a hamstring, but nobody – it was like he showed up in the injury report with a hamstring. I mean, I'm not saying he's not hurt. It's just – Adam Schefter tweeted something about this or said something about this on ESPN or NFL Live earlier in the offseason, like way early in the offseason, like April. It was like, if T. Higgins isn't close to play, if he isn't completely healthy, watch, he won't go out there.
Oh, that's a good point. And there was, he got into like a fight with an analyst. And now that I think about it, I don't remember which former player it was, but they were like yelling at each other a little bit. And
they're like, oh, it was Orlovsky, maybe. Yeah, they're like, there's no way. There's no way he's going to sit. And look, like, the Bengals, so you have Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Higgins is like the first pick of the second round. Ja'Marr Chase, the top five pick or top 10 pick, whatever it was. You paid Burrow all this money, and you don't want to pay his weapons. They franchise tag T. Higgins. It's clear they're doing the Jesse Bates thing where they draft his replacement in Jermaine Burton, and you know, you let him go after making him play a franchise tag year. It seems to me like T. Higgins is sort of doing a, nah, I don't think so, guys. And so if he's on the injury report at all on Wednesday or Thursday, I don't think you're going to see him on Sunday. And, you know, it sounds like there's been rumblings like week three might already be off the table.
Wow.
Are the Rams good?
Yes, but
right,
they just put three offensive linemen and Puka Nacua on IR, which is a big problem. You know, they went out and revamped the offensive line to be a really good run team. I still think that they'll be fine. Defensively, you know, they lose Aaron Donald. They're not going to be as good. Could see a shootout with Arizona. I that's one where, to me, the Rams are an easy pick. Sean McVay's, I think, 12-1 and 11-2-1, 12-1 straight up, 11-2-1 against the spread against Arizona since he got to LA, which is just wild. And like Matthew Stafford with Cooper Kupp, they still have some underrated guy. I think Colby Parkinson's really good. I think Whittington, the rookie's good. Yeah, they have Ty Johnson. They have guys that can fill in. DeMarcus Robinson. They can make it work on the other pieces with Stafford. The offensive line is the bigger concern for me because Stafford needs time back there. They need to go to run block for Kyren Williams. It's not going to be an issue this week. Arizona has nothing up front in terms of the pass rush. But moving forward, that offensive line, if it deteriorates any further, you do worry about Stafford taking too many shots.
What'd you think of Jaden Daniels in week one?
I thought that he was as advertised in the Cliff Kingsbury offense.
So you're not as – I mean, we're very skeptical Kingsbury guys ourselves, but you're not necessarily
that was very skeptical. Like, I mean, I feel like I see 40 Cliff Kingsbury tweets a day, and it's, you know, there's Terry McLaurin spending 90% of his time on one side. There's not a bunch of pre-snap motion. They're not running fast. You know, you're trying to pound the ball. You don't have a great offensive line. And it really deteriorates into Jaden Daniels kind of running for his life. It's sort of like, when Cliff was running Arizona with Kyler, you know, light, where it's like, all right, look, oh, no, let's run. And I just don't know. I think to really win games, there needs to be maybe a little more systematic approach, right, where you sort of have a structure of an offense versus simply the playground. Like, the playground stuff is fun, and I got him in fantasy. You play him all over the place. I think he's a great talent. I think it's going to be fun to watch. But, you know, you do worry about that a little bit, especially in, you know, a city where the last time you had a number two overall pick that ran too much, things didn't end up well.
Well, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight and this weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
See you, pal.
Love talking to our guy, Will Brinson, on Grant and Danny. Does his work over at CBS. All right, the Noahs, Igbinoghene on defense, Brown on offense, the roles they'll play on Sunday, two of the big keys for the Commanders against the Giants. You're listening to The Fan.
Nope. Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Grant and Danny on The Fan. The news of the day was that Emmanuel Forbes is having surgery on his thumb. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks in Washington secondary. So they're going to have to make some moves back into the roster, presumably, in the defensive backfield. But in the meantime, they've got some depth to tap into. Michael Davis, I was surprised to see, didn't play at all defensively in week one. That's about to change. And Noah Igbinoghene, who has become the next man up at cornerback, is going to start opposite Benjamin St. Juste. The only good news I'm going to give you is that the Giants don't really have receivers that are going to scare you a whole lot. And Malik Nabers was actually limited in practice today. Had no issue on the practice injury report yesterday, but with a knee today, was listed as limited. Something happened on the practice field yesterday, I guess.
Yeah, so seeing some reports now, Jordan Renan has basically said it's a tweak and it's thought of as minor, but still, it went from not a thing to, as you said, limited in practice today, something to monitor here as the week progresses.
Their receivers otherwise, Darius Slayton, former fifth-round pick, Wandell Robinson, who's been around, was their most targeted receiver in week one, Jalen Hyatt, who they drafted in the third round last year as a speedster that they haven't used much, and then Gunnar Olszewski. He's the guy that used to play for the Patriots, who's like a punt returner type. I mean, there is nobody in that receiver room that should worry you at all other than Nabers. But that doesn't change the fact it was a tough first week for St. Juste. He said they didn't communicate enough. And Igbinoghene is more of a nickel corner that's now going to be playing outside. And he has not been a starter in this league as over the last few years. It was a former first-round pick that teams have moved on from because they didn't want to continue to ask him to do the thing that Washington's about to ask him to do.
Yeah, so, you know, larger role for certain guys. I think that's, I don't think you're losing a ton, as you've alluded to correctly, without Forbes being in there. But, you know, if there's the rare, base defense, if that is even a thing in the year of our Lord 2024, we're only two cornerbacks on the field. Maybe it's Sanders still a little bit more often, opposite Benjamin St. Juste. But you would think he's, you know, such an important role there in the slot that he would sort of maintain that at a minimum. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they shuffle it up. Again, it's such a transitional time in terms of the way secondaries are. It used to be, I've got a free safety and a strong safety. One guy was, you know, Merton Hanks. The other guy was Sam Shade. It looked like a linebacker that got lost went to the wrong meeting.
I love Sam Shade.
Of course you do. Just laying wood on people.
What did Sam Shade wear?
20?
No.
30?
No.
40.
I should say that I'm not positive, but I remember him as 29. Darius, can I get a PFR? Sam Shade research analysis, please. I remember him as 29. That was my guy.
Well, I remember you couldn't see what his eyes looked like because that visor was dark. It was tinted. You know what I mean? Like, which way is he looking? You don't know. He's got a visor on.
His name was awesome, too, by the way. What do you got on Sam Shade?
I've got, for the Washington Redskins, number 29.
Let's go.
29. Good for you.
You sleep on numbers.
Yeah, I do. I only remember a couple. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So now it's different. Now everybody's the same, and everybody rotates, and everybody's kind of in and out. And sometimes Quan Martin's a safety, but sometimes he kind of walks up and he's in the box, but he's also a corner if they motion a certain way. More positionless, more amoeba means a little bit less like, who's the starting cornerback? Maybe your best player is another safety who could walk in and do some things.
Sure, and I'm not disagreeing, but you need to just have corners who can cover. You know, at some point,
well, you do need that too. I'm not saying you have zero corner.
No, but they kind of.
It's not like our fantasy draft. We went zero running back until round 15.
It's St. Juste, and then what? I mean, at some point, you need a cornerback who you just put out there and let cover a wide receiver, and they don't really have that.
No,
at this point, right now.
No, they don't.
But my question on Igbinoghene would be: it feels like there's a pretty good chance the storyline's going to be that they got better without Forbes after this game. maybe because they did, but specifically because it's not Evans and Godwin. Do you get what I'm saying?
Of course I do.
Like, you played the Bucs. If you're secondary, it's a terrible matchup. You're going to get torched. Fast forward to this week. Now you're playing the Giants.
Would you look at that? They look better.
Much more fortuitous matchup. So you can prepare already for the, man, they didn't get beat nearly as much. Wow, weird. When Emmanuel Forbes isn't out there, you know, Baker Manning didn't throw for 300 yards and four touchdowns. You're playing Daniel Jones. You're playing a weaponless offense, largely, depending on what happens with Neighbors. But I think there's also some truth maybe to the fact that I just don't see Igbinoghene being worse. Maybe he's also not effective, but they're not going to get worse at that position, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's also not as if they've got some star waiting in the wings that was just being blocked by some, you know, veteran who's overpaid, right, where you had to start him. There's no white knight. There's nobody riding through that door to be the crusader here. They're going to be average to below average, probably, more realistic, at that position all year. What are you going to do about it, like, coaching-wise, right? How are you going to scheme it up so that it's the bleeding stops, that you're even in some of these games? Because you can't just give up 37 points a week. That ain't going to fly. I don't care how good your offense is, right?
What about the other Noah Brown, the wide receiver, Cliff Kingsbury's offensive coordinator, trying to get balls to receivers, trying to make plays happen for this offense? What about Noah Brown and his involvement? Let's get to Kingsbury, Darris, from earlier today on Noah Brown and what the offensive coordinator said he might be able to provide for Washington. This was when he was meeting with the media this afternoon. This will be cut too from Cliff.
We'll see with Noah. He's coming off a little bit of an injury, so we're easing him back in. But he's had some big games, been a very talented player in this league. I'm excited to see what he can do.
I'm excited to see what he can do also. Now, again, he was such a late signee, right, where even though he has some familiarity with some parts of system or offense or whatever, still a crash course trying to get up to speed with all the different nuances, even though there's probably not much to learn in terms of motion, am I right? But even still, all the terminology, it's like learning a brand new language. So it's probably unrealistic for him to be able to play in week number one and be able to know everything intuitively. So we'll see here for week number two. I didn't know that, actually. I didn't know what the injury was.
Can we get a little more on that? I mean, they're not going to offer it, obviously. Was there a follow-up? Did he give any more detail? Listen to this again really quickly.
We'll see with Noah. He's coming off a little bit of an injury, so we're easing him back in. But he's had some big games.
That tells me the reason he didn't play, maybe it was what they said, that, like you just said, he wasn't completely up to speed with the offense, but a little bit of an injury could be a tweak or a pull or something. I'm sure maybe that was a factor then, right?
Yeah, you combine one and two and you get, okay, let's have him inactive for week number one, but now we can unleash him full go later.
But what's to stop Noah Brown from being a guy this week that could go out and give him 5 for 60 or something like that?
I think a couple things would get in the way of that, but I know what you mean.
Like their passing game, the fact that they didn't throw to wide receivers, the fact that they're not very good. But I'm just saying, I don't think there's anybody standing between him and opportunities.
Well, that's what it is to me.
Cardio last week and didn't catch a pass. Olamide Zaccheaus, after the whole camp and preseason, being the featured guy that everybody loved, over and over again at the line of scrimmage, getting all the bubbles and the smokes and the screens, he had two targeted balls he couldn't haul in, and then he had the out route for 15 yards, his only catch of the game in garbage time. Like, those guys had a weak head start.
Yeah, Luke McCaffrey on three different screens, as you kind of alluded to.
And you could still have him, and then you'd have the biggest receiving core you've had here in years with McCaffrey in the slot and Noah Brown on the outside.
Yeah, to me, Noah Brown is here not to do some of the slot stuff, not to do some of the short stuff, but to give them some semblance of a deep option. Even if you're not going to hit him, the idea that you might, I think, is 90% of why he's here. Once a month, they'll take a shot, called up, dialed up, at the right time. Jaden, throw it as far as you can. Noah, run as straight and as fast as you can. I think the threat of him is probably more important than the actual player.
What did you find, Clary?
So Standig did say that he did miss some time this summer in Houston with a shoulder injury. So I don't know if that's still linked.
That might be what Cliff Kingsbury is talking about.
Potentially, yeah.
So he even came here, though, in his practice since then. So he's not necessarily saying it was a new injury or like anything that happened during practice here.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If he's saying he's coming back, he's trying to get fully back up to speed.
And learn the offense. That's a nagging thing. No problem. Let's make him an active week one. But yeah, I don't know that his value is full route tree. He's better than the next guy. I think his replacement level in terms of, working from 20 yards and in, where he's exceptional, is that being a big deep threat. Like, to me, he's a much better version of De'Ami Brown.
Well, that's my point. I mean, he doesn't have to be particularly good to be better than what they've got.
Right.
De'Ami Brown has never caught 15 balls in a season. You know, he did it in 2 weeks at one point last year mm-hmm. in a good offense in Houston. Why wouldn't he be able to just immediately slot in across from McLaurin in that formation? And, you know, when they go two or three receivers, again, the size of McCaffrey in the slot mm-hmm. with him on the outside, I kind of like. And then you have a physical, you know, war daddy type in Terry, even though he's not as big as those other guys.
But plays big.
And that gives you, I think, a different dimension on offense that you haven't really had from a passing standpoint. Now, there's a whole other question, which you were kind of, I think, alluding to facetiously or maybe seriously when you said, well, I'll tell you why it's not going to go 5 for 60 as the number two receiver, because Terry McLaurin can't do that as the number one receiver.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going 5 for 60. But your point, if the point is, who's staying in the way of opportunity? Nobody.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, nobody.
What is to stop him from being the number two receiver on Sunday?
Absolutely nothing.
And then he should be. And then he should be the guy that gets, if he's healthy and he knows the offense.
Yeah, assuming he knows the offense.
Let's kick the tires.
Yeah, I'm letting him up opposite Terry McLaurin. Or maybe on the same side, God forbid, so that you have...
Well, I know where that's going to be. It'll be on the left.
It'll be on the left. If you're scoring at home, it'll be on the left. But I'll send Noah Brown deep, and I'll send Terry McLaurin somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Who helps more on Sunday? Well, it's obviously Igbinoghene because he'll play more. So let's craft the question this way. Who do you think makes more helpful plays on Sunday and does a better job? Igbinoghene or the other Noah?
So I still think it's Igbinoghene, but if you ask me again in 2 weeks, it'll be Noah Brown. I still think there's some learning curve that has to happen here. I think it's too much to expect. You just got on campus less than a month ago, and you got to know everything and be as good as these guys that have been living this since... You know, the springtime, I think that's a tall ask.
Against my better judgment, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say Noah Brown. I'm going to say that the Giants do a let's take Terry McLaurin out of the equation thing. And someone
wouldn't
else,
you? I would, yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah. Of course. Someone else has to beat us, which is, to some extent, I think what the Bucs did. They didn't really have to because, you know, Kingsbury and the offense helped you take McLaurin out of the plan too. But nobody else stepped up. I think some of those balls to Zacchaeus early in the game, that comeback that was a little wide of him, maybe Brown with some catch radius holds that in. Mm-hmm. There was another play later that was like a comeback for a first down. Three guys working on the left in a little stack. One to the right all by himself was Zacchaeus on a 3rd and 6, I think it was. He ran like a 7-yard stop route and had a guy draped on his back. Couldn't make the catch. You know, with his size, I think if you use Brown in those situations, those are receptions just because he boxes defenders out. So I'll say he actually has a 4 or 5 catch day.
I hope you're right.
And is really helpful and helps get some things going. What are you guys expecting? 800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor listener lines here on Grant and Danny. And is there a chance that the Emmanuel Forbes injury ends up not hurting them despite losing last year's first round pick and a corner that starts? An easy punching bag to say he hasn't been good, but there's a reason he's starting. It's not because he's worse than everybody else on the roster. What do you think of Igbinoghene and Davis playing more at corner? We're Grant and Danny on the Fan. Taking you up to 6:15, a half hour from now, on Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. We'll get you ready for Nats baseball coming up before we get out of here, and we'll hit all the headlines of the day at the top of the hour. Chris is in Hyattsville on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Chris, do you think Noah Igbinoghene or Noah Brown makes more of an impact with the expanded role this weekend?
I don't know a damn thing about either of those guys. All I care about is Jaden Daniels. I think we're going to get our first signature win this weekend in the Jaden Daniels era. In fact, he's going to score so many touchdowns, they're going to consider renaming the touchdown the Jaden.
Giving out waffles when he gets into the end zone.
Maybe they should rename the mask guy from Major Tutty, Major Jaden.
Oof.
First win of the Jaden Daniels era has got to come this weekend. If it doesn't, whatever. But we're in for a really long season. They got to look a lot better. That's my only...
That's my thing.
Must. My only demand is you cannot look like you did last weekend. But just so we're all on the same page, this is going to be a fun year, a competitive year. They're going to have a chance to go over 6.5 wins. That was the market number in Vegas with the odds makers. This is one you got to win.
I'm trying to say it, same thing, but a different way. If you'd like us to believe you anymore, when you try to sell something...
Who are you talking to?
The organization in general.
Dairy Queen or somebody else?
The football gentleman, Local 53. Everyone from us, the sales guy, who's not, it's not his fault. If you know he's.
But you're saying they got to win or they got to play decent ball?
You got to play so much better.
I agree.
And it probably would result in a win against a team that's pretty terrible. Unless the Giants go, we can revisit it if they go 14-3 from here on out. I don't see it, but let's say they do. I think the Giants are going to suck. If you don't show well, all the hype videos and all the Instagram posts, and next time you tweet out, hey, here's our schedule release, it's going to be nothing but trolls and goblins. The next time you're trying to convince people that this is different, it becomes harder to do so. This is a real important one, just so people believe you, because everyone wants to buy in.
It's not a must-win game. I like the parlance of our buddy Ben Raby, who's a hockey guy, and he goes with the auto win. You auto win this game.
It's an auto win game, not to be confused with Ottawa.
Very different than Ottawa. But it's not a must win. It's an auto win. You're at home. You're playing a team that, if worst case, someone could say is every bit as good as you. Don't care. You haven't won. It's week two. You're at home. You're debuting your rookie. It's sold out. You auto win this one against a bad Giants team. But if you don't, I need you to look good. That's the expectation. Let's go to Sean in D.C. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
Can I give a word of advice to the last caller?
You may.
Check out the game last year, Cincinnati Bengals against the Houston Texans. Noah Brown had 178 yards. We will feature Noah Brown. He will become Washington's number one target. Have a good day.
Number one target.
Terry McLaurin would like a word.
Well, here's how I could see it. Other teams go, not Terry. Someone else, and then he beats him out by a couple of catches or a couple of looks or something like that.
Noah Brown did have that game he referenced in Cincy against the Bengals in a 30-27 win. The Houston offense was in a bad way. They had some injuries at wide receiver. Noah Brown's role was elevated, and he went out on 8 targets and grabbed 7 balls for 172 yards in that victory. But here's my problem with that.
Okay.
C.J. Stroud walking through that door. Is Bobby Slowick, who's scheming him open in the Shanahan system, coming with him to the nation's capital? I like that he had the game, because I don't think De'Ami Brown's capable of that game with the Texans. I don't think Alameda Zacchaeus is capable of that game with the Texans. So that in and of itself is telling. He had 2 huge games in a row, by the way.
The week before, 6 for a $1.53 in a tutty?
Exactly. 6 targets, 6 grabs, 150, scored. That was against Tampa. You just watched them. That's a pretty good secondary. The Texans, though, hung 39. No Stroud, no Slowick. It's a whole different deal. I saw somebody today kind of doing this thing where they were like, well, what about when this guy did this? And it was the same kind of deal where it's like, well, he did that with 3 MVPs around him and a different coaching staff. So I'm not sure if it's utterly relevant quite to what we're talking about here and now. But yeah, I mean, if the point is Noah Brown's got talent and has had huge games, he has some pelts on the wall in that regard. Fact. Can't deny that. But my confidence that he is that player is just not that high. The Texans probably don't let him walk if that was the case. Is he better than the guys they have other than McLaurin? Very possibly. That's more an indictment on them than an endorsement of him.
Agreed.
But it's also why I'm giving him a chance to go catch a handful of balls this week.
Yeah. I think if you gave, this is, I was trying to quantify things like this in a different way. If you gave an NFL receiver 100 targets in this offense, who would do the best? And you go down the list of Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, all the usual suspects. You'd go down for a little while, then you get to Terry McLaurin. You got to go down really, really far to get to anybody that Washington had that wasn't Noah Brown, where you'd take someone else, right? The same average 100 targets in this offense. And some of it would be fun to debate. But right now, Noah Brown is higher, to me at least, not having seen him play in burgundy and gold pants, not having seen him play yet, I'd put him higher on that hierarchy than any of the guys they had previously of who would do the most with the same 100 targets. So I think opportunity's there.
Here was the what I was thinking of. So it was actually Bob Papa on with B. Mitch and Finley, I think, today, here on 106.7 The Fan. Bob Papa is the Giants play-by-play broadcaster, New York guy. And he said Dan Quinn is the defensive coordinator in Dallas, went 6-0 against the Giants. Cool. Is Micah Parsons coming with him? Do we get him or we don't? Like, with all due respect to Dan Quinn's numbers as the coordinator of the Cowboys against the Giants, I'm not sure how that's relevant to now with this bad group that he's got here. Did anyone watch Dallas's defense this past weekend without him? When they shoved it on the Browns? Number two in the NFL going into this week? He had some dudes on that defense that now Mike Zimmer has. And all of a sudden, Mike Zimmer's going to be a hot head coaching candidate when he turns his hat backwards because he's the awesome defensive coordinator in the NFL with the top five defense generating all the takeaways. So I'm not pretending like Dan Quinn doesn't have an idea of how to stop the Giants. He obviously does. But do you have the horses to execute the plan? I mean, that's what we need to figure out.
Yeah, Jack Del Rio had some pretty good defensive track records. And all of a sudden, he couldn't do it. I don't know. It's interesting to me. That's all. But yeah, I mean, benefit of the doubt still that there will be improvement. I don't know how much. I think that's where the fun debate will be.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. We still got to get you ready for Nats baseball, which we will do before we get out of here. We'll get you your weather report and your lineups coming up in just a few minutes. Also, some of the breaking news from around the NFL and sports today when we hit the headlines in just a few on G&D. The big story in town, Emmanuel Forbes out 4 to 6 weeks, had his thumb operated on today. He will miss at least 1 month. You're listening to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.